Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, coming to you from Philadelphia. This week, Hillary Clinton claims the Democratic nomination, protests in Philadelphia, Trump, and Russia. Last night, Hillary Clinton became the first woman to accept a major party's nomination for the presidency. She jabbed Donald Trump and spoke of unity.
Americans don't say, I alone can fix it. We say, we'll fix it together.
Big speeches all week. Vice President Joe Biden went straight at Trump.
He's trying to tell us he cares about the middle class. Give me a break. That's a bunch of malarkey.
And Donald Trump raised a firestorm at his resort near Miami on Wednesday when he called on Russia to cyber spy and find Hillary Clinton's missing emails.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Claire Malone of 538, John Yang of the PBS NewsHour, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What were you thinking when you watched Hillary Clinton accept her historic nomination last night? And after 2 weeks of conventions, who's speaking to you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We are broadcasting today from the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia. Joining me is John Yang, senior correspondent for the PBS NewsHour. John Yang, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Great to be here, Tom.
Also with us here in Philadelphia, Claire Malone, senior political writer for 538 and a regular on their elections podcast. With us last week in Cleveland. Claire, it's great to have you back here.
Good to be back.
And from Boston, Jack Beatty joins us. He's been writing pieces about big moments in convention history over the last 2 weeks. You can read that and sign up for our On Point newsletter at our website at onpointradio.org. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, John, and Claire.
It's great to have you all right here. 2 weeks of conventions and everybody's running on fumes in the reporting community. But it was a pretty big one again this week. And last night, Hillary Clinton stepping up saying something has really changed here, criticizing Donald Trump for painting a bleak picture of America during the Republican National Convention last week.
He's betting that the perils of today's world will blind us to its unlimited promise. He's taken the Republican Party a long way. From morning in America to midnight in America.
From morning to midnight, and she went right at his, what, fitness for the job. Here she was talking about Donald Trump's temperament.
Imagine him in the Oval Office facing a real crisis. A man you can bait with a tweet is not a man we can trust with nuclear weapons.
Claire, you were there. Everybody's watching. A huge week of speeches for the Democrats, yeah. Unlike the GOP, where many Republicans did not show up. Everybody showed up in Philadelphia. And then last night, all this anticipation was there. Will she deliver? Will she step up after all those big addresses and give one worthy? How'd she do?
You know, Hillary Clinton isn't Barack Obama when it comes to public speaking. But I think she gave a speech that was sort of three parts in some ways. She pretty much opened with Donald Trump is a moral hazard. That was her big, you know, her big point. And she sort of was hitting on the same themes that Biden and Obama the night before had been hitting on, which is you should distrust a man who says the answers lie in him alone. Mm-hmm. And she also, I think she did touch on her, you know, the historic nature of her candidacy, not in sort of a driving way. Mm-hmm. I think she did it sort of subtly by, I think people might have noticed that Hillary Clinton's mother has become a character in this campaign.
Yes.
When she sort of clinched the nomination earlier in the spring, she brought up her mother. You know, it was her mother's birthday. Her mother had a hard scrabble childhood. And so Clinton was sort of, it was almost like she was addressing her favorability ratings. You know, people don't know what to make of me, she said. And she said, and I think, you know, by talking about her mother and, you know, how did Hillary Clinton get her steely spine? It's from her mother.
Mm-hmm. And putting yourself in a line of descent from women.
Right.
From her mother to her daughter Chelsea, who introduced her last night.
Yeah. And then the last part, sort of the biggest theme that I saw was reaching out to Republicans explicitly, independents, saying if you do not recognize the Republican Party of Donald Trump, this is your campaign. And she did sort of give a nod to maybe we've done things wrong in the past, haven't articulated why the Democratic Party is good for you, and we're going to try to do better. So that was sort of her pitch.
Really going hard on this theme of no single person can fix this, and taking Donald Trump up on that line of his last week. She used it more than once in her speech last night. Here she was saying, he's – and also saying the country is great. And Donald Trump says it's not great. Here she goes with both saying Donald Trump is not the only person who can fix what's gone wrong in America.
Don't let anyone tell you that our country is weak. We're not. Don't let anyone tell you we don't have what it takes. We do. And most of all, don't believe anyone who says, I alone can fix it.
John Yang, did she bring what she needed to bring to do the job last night?
It wasn't a great speech. I don't think it'll go down in the history of great acceptance speeches, but it did do the job. I thought it wrapped everything up together. The themes they had been laying on the table all week long, they pulled them together. And the other thing that I think she did well is that she framed the debate that they want to have, that the Democrats want to have, that the Clinton campaign wants to have. It really is in a way that that line from Donald Trump, I alone can fix this, versus, fittingly for Philadelphia, we the people. That was a line that President Obama had in his speech. The campaign people I talked to said as soon as they saw that in the president's speech, a bell went off, a light went on, and they realized that that's something they can really use, and it resonated with the crowd. It resonated with Secretary Clinton. I bet you're going to be hearing a lot about that that line on the bus tour that they're kicking off today through
Pennsylvania to Youngstown, Ohio.
Absolutely. And in the days and weeks ahead.
Jack Beatty, what did you think? She had a big lineup in front of her to try and meet or match or best. I don't think she stakes her claim on being the greatest orator ever, but that was I thought that was a pretty darn solid stepping up to the podium by Hillary Clinton.
I did, too. It was crisp, and it was delivered with a sort of understated authority. She's been in the arena. We've heard that. And she made a point of that. She says, I've been in the arena. I've fallen, and I've gotten up. And even people who loathe her have to see that there's just broad truth in that. She has a remarkable degree of personal resilience to have been humiliated by her husband, as she was in front of the world.
Monica Lewinsky
and the rest. Gone on as she did. That took extraordinary inner resources, and it wasn't just a matter of ambition. It was what she learned early in life, character. And I think that came through. And, Peter Hart, the focus group researcher, he was asked on John Yang's program, the PBS NewsHour, what's Hillary's problem with voters? Why doesn't she connect? And he said, there's a glass curtain around her. It's not just a glass ceiling above her, but a glass curtain around. And people can't penetrate that. They don't sense who she is. And he said that's related to her trust problem. So he was asked, well, what can she do about the trust problem? And he said, try to break that curtain a little. Try to let people know who she is. And beginning with Bill Clinton's speech, really beginning with Michelle Obama's speech, and then on to Bill Clinton and on to the other speakers, we learned a lot about who she is. We put a few chinks in that glass curtain.
Go for a message of competence and attack Donald Trump if you can't deal with the you don't know me entirely as much as you might or the trustworthy question. And she had some amazing people up there speaking for her last night. Retired Marine Four-Star General John Allen, who commanded U.S. troops in Afghanistan, spoke in support of Hillary Clinton as commander-in-chief. He said that her presidency would mean international relations will not be reduced to a business transaction, kind of a dig at Donald Trump, and then a tougher dig. Here he is responding to Donald Trump saying he, the general, the Trump, would support waterboarding and the killing of ISIS family members.
Our armed forces will not become an instrument of torture, and they will not be engaged in murder or carry out other illegal activities.
That was some delivery last night, like a drill sergeant talking to the newbies on the drill field there, but saying if Hillary Clinton is president, A, she can do it, and B, we won't be asked to go out and become murderers and torturers. And the suggestion, we do not want to do that. It's not legal, and a pretty big dig at Trump.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one interesting thing about this Democratic National Convention is that it's had a lot of military people up there sort of vouching for Clinton. She's, I mean, obviously she was the Secretary of State, but she kind of has a noted reputation as being a hawk. And so I think that a lot of her general friends are more than happy to come out and say, we can't really see Donald Trump as commander in chief. He said some pretty outlandish things this week. I think that that's a pretty safe thing to say, that inviting Russia into your election is quite a thing to do, inviting them to hack Hillary Clinton's emails, or, you know, and Paul Ryan came out immediately and said this is unacceptable. So I think it perfectly played into, you know, the last couple of days, you know, the speakers where we were talking about national security. Or do you really want — this goes back to the question of moral hazard — do you really want a man with this temperament who's this easily rattled? Do you want him to be running the military? Do you want him to, you know, to tell soldiers to break the chain of command?
And then, John, we heard in the background right there this chant of USA, USA, which we have associated with Republican conventions, it seems like forever, this wrapping in the flag and taking the meaning of that chant and turning it to something different. But the optimism, the USA, USA, the patriotism there, something we associate with Republican conventions past. Last week in Cleveland, very different, dark. Now it's in the Democrats' hands, John.
Yeah, 2 points about that. Number one, I think you're correct. It really did at many times feel like a Republican convention. The optimism, the faith in the American people, some use the words, to quote Ronald Reagan, the shining city on the hill. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that every time there was a military speaker or there was a reference to the American military, there was a hardcore group of Bernie Sanders supporters, most of them in the
chanting.
California delegation, mm-hmm. Oregon delegation as well, chanting no more war. And then the whip team would start up the cheer, USA, to drown them out.
So in some ways, that was wallpapering over the division that's right there in the Democratic Party, but it was very effective.
Exactly.
See, that general, those flags, whether it resonates, we'll come back and look at that. And with what portion of the American public? John Yang with PBS NewsHour, Claire Malone with 538, Jack Beatty, please stand by in Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook in Philadelphia. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, coming to you from Philadelphia this week. We're looking at a week in the news. The Democrats in Philadelphia, Hillary Clinton, the nominee, and the race is on for the general election in November. Claire Malone is with us here at the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia. She's a senior political writer for 538. John Yang is here, correspondent for the PBS NewsHour. Our news analyst, Jack Beatty, is with us from Boston. And you can join us online at onpointradio.org. Did Hillary Clinton speak to you when you look back on these 2 weeks of conventions? Who's singing your song? Are the Democrats now the flag-waving party, taking back the meaning of America from Donald Trump? Are they missing something? Something out there driving the fear, the anger, the appeal of Trump? There was humor last night. Hillary Clinton, in her speech, taking a shot at Donald Trump, referencing his speech at the Republican National Convention.
He spoke for 70-odd minutes, and I do mean odd. Offered zero solutions.
But there were also very serious and moving moments last night, maybe the most so when Khizr Khan, the father of a fallen Muslim American soldier, gave a speech which targeted Donald Trump and his proposal to ban Muslims from the United States. He spoke in a kind of tone of grief and very powerfully to the hall, and finally challenging Donald Trump directly. Here he was.
Donald Trump, you're asking Americans to trust you with their future. Let me ask you, have you even read the United States Constitution? I will gladly lend you my copy.
John Yang, the father of a fallen American, Muslim American soldier, who had said there that Donald Trump, he said in his speech, consistently smears the character of Muslims. He said, go look at the graves of brave patriots who died defending the United States of America. You'll see all faiths, genders, and ethnicities. He said, speaking directly to Trump from the podium, you have sacrificed nothing and no one. He and his wife by his side had sacrificed their son. A powerful speech.
Absolutely. One of the most powerful moments, I think, of the entire week. It is, you know, a lot of people in convention halls are not paying attention too much to what's going on the podium. There's a lot of it has the gentle roar and rumble of a airport waiting rooms at times. But for that moment, the place, you could have heard a pin drop on that convention floor. And also, there, as I said before, anytime there was anything military related, there was protests from a lot of the Sanders groups. There was nothing during that. They stood in rapt attention, and it was just a really very moving because of the quiet dignity of the couple, the parents of this service member. Just the obvious grief. They're just very deep feelings.
But the way he attached it so powerfully to principle there, saying, look at the principles in your Constitution. Let's go to our callers, Mark in Acton, Massachusetts. Mark, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I thought that was by far the most moving speech by anyone at either convention. And listening to him, I was moved because I was watching the majesty of the American experiment laid bare. Here is an immigrant Muslim whose son gave his life to save his fellow American soldiers. And as he said, if Donald Trump had his way, his son would never have been there to save those soldiers' lives. 60 years ago, attorney Joe Welch exposed the fundamental indecency of McCarthyism. I thought last night Khazir Khan exposed the fundamental indecency of Trumpism.
Mark, I appreciate your call. Jack Beatty, that much power there last night. You know that Donald Trump has his supporters and he continues to speak to them. But in that hall last night, it was powerful. That much power, Jack?
Well, I thought so, and I remember that McCarthy moment. I was a kid. I was watching it on TV, and he said, Senator, at long last have you no decency. At long last have you no shame. And this was he was smearing a young serviceman, as a matter of fact, McCarthy was. You know, but we have to recognize that Trump's appeal here is a real one, and it was in large part unaddressed, obliquely addressed by the Democrats. Here's what I mean. By a margin of 60-34%, whites without a college degree said that Trump's speech, quote, reflected the way you personally feel about things in the U.S. today. That's 2-1. That's the way they feel about the working class whites feel about the U.S. today. College educated whites narrowly said, no, that's not the way they feel. And when you look at a big Pew report on Trump's support, on the reason for Trump's support, the dominant reason by far is people agree that a growing number of newcomers from other countries threatens U.S. values. That is by far the biggest driver to Trump, which is, you could call it, xenophobia. And the second thing that draws these white working class voters to Trump is the sentiment, quote, that it's bad for the country that blacks, Latinos, and Asians will be a majority of the population. That's the second strongest lure. And way down on the list is the economy. We have an alienated population to which Trump is speaking, but that's a kind of who do not like what we saw from Mr. Khan, who do not like the new face of the country, the social inclusion of the Democratic Party. In fact, they're put off by it. And if the Democrats had one weakness, they didn't speak enough to that fraction of white voters, of the white working class voters, for whom economic insecurity is the driving force, and economic insecurity tended to take a second place to social inclusion.
But Jack, if the polls you're citing there are correct, it's not as the cultural issue is even bigger than the economic issues. How do you solve that? I mean, the economy is hard enough to solve. The other one is an issue of time and acceptance. I mean, these changes are happening. Maybe the economy is not the heart of it, Jack. Maybe it is the cultural challenge.
Maybe so. I guess, Hillary did speak to that. She said, Democrats are the party of working people, but we haven't done a good enough job showing that they haven't. And they have been, you know, insofar as any of that Trump support can be detached on the economy, the Democrats really have to go after that. And there was some effort at that. They talked about, you know, we're going to get coal miners, we're going to revive manufacturing. That can help.
Claire, what about it? Is there a problem potentially here still with elites, with the Democrats in that hall not feeling the full economic insecurity of some portion of the American population? I have to say, it seemed like a fairly economically diverse group of delegates there compared to last week in Cleveland, at least to my impression. But is there some element that's still not in touch with what's driving a deeper economic security that, you know, has Donald Trump still talking about elites this week as he points toward the Democrats?
Yeah. I think there are two issues at play. One, the American working class is, we often say the white working class, the American working class is filled with blacks and Hispanics now, right? Which are natural bases of the Democratic Party. So in some ways, the Democrats are very much in touch with the working class in America. You know, blacks and Hispanics are a growing population. But I will say that, you know, 538, we recently did a story about what is the driving issue of Trump voters, of Republican voters this election. I did it with my colleague, Harry Enten, and we found that issues of what we called cultural grievance, the idea that immigration, all these things are changing the country, that you feel more pessimistic than your parents' generation. And to a certain extent, yeah, the Democratic, you know, elites haven't been paying attention to the white working class. I think that that's a very legitimate grievance to have with the Democratic Party. Are elites paying attention? Maybe now. I think people are a little bit smacked in the face with it. They don't know what to make of it. People were confused in the spring by the rise of Trump. And I think it's a good zap to people to say, pay attention to these people that, you know, yeah, the economy is changing. A lot of these people aren't going to get their jobs back. But Bill Clinton's speech, he said, you know, we knew we weren't going to win West Virginia. Hillary sent me down there anyway to say, hey, we're going to be around. So, I mean, you know, they're trying to make a nod to it. But
how do you do both things, Jen Yang? Trump last week speaking very directly to exactly that alienated population. The Democrats embracing social inclusion, ethnic, racial, you name it, so vividly, repeatedly from the stage. Does that make it impossible for them to make a direct appeal to this one part of the voting population? Or is maybe they feel like, look, here's the future. We're going with it.
Well, yeah. Well, I asked that question to Clinton campaign officials. They would point to speeches by Elizabeth Warren, by Senator Sanders, the testimonials. And I think that what they're trying – the message they're trying to get across to people who feel that Donald Trump is speaking for them and is making promises about what he's going to do to the economy, that he's going to bring manufacturing jobs back, is that he has a history of talking big and not delivering. The argument they were making to me is that the people who talked about Trump University, the people who talked about being stiffed, the contractors who were stiffed in Atlantic City, that they were speaking to that issue, to trying to appeal to the white working class voters. I don't know if that was that effective. When you think about all the faces we saw on the stage, the testimonials we heard for Secretary Clinton, I do feel that was one area that was missing.
Let's go to Amanda calling from Dawsonville, Georgia. Amanda, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to talk about the callers and the journalists who are talking about how the Democrats the Republicans and Trump, the convention last week, he was not painting a doom and gloom society as the Democrats and such are saying he did. He was being very realistic to our terror threats, to the fact that uncontrolled immigration is leading to unemployment among legal.
So you don't
American
see you don't see Donald Trump as a doom and gloom guy. You see him as a realist, Amanda.
He is a realist.
I mean, but yes. You know, people sort of right, left, and center have said, "Oh my gosh, Republicans were for a long, long time the party of optimism," and even lots of Republicans saying we didn't hear that last week from Cleveland and worrying about it, but to you it feels like that means Donald Trump is just in touch with real problems.
Yes, and the optimism is implied because he'll deal with the problems and we don't have to be fearful of when the next bomb is going to go off or when my daughter goes to look for a job in a few years, it'll be filled by an undocumented illegal immigrant.
Amanda, I appreciate your call very much. I mean, Claire, there's a gulf right there, sure. Very wide. I mean, if you listen to it, it was a dark picture, but Amanda says it wasn't doom and gloom in the sense of unrealistic. To her impression, her feeling is, well, these are the threats that are right there, and I'm glad he's talking about them.
I think, you know, the interesting thing about the Trump convention was that, I think a lot of Americans now do feel the way Amanda feels. And I think this goes back to something that Clinton and the Democrats were trying to, you know, put forth, which is we haven't done the good job of communicating with you.
Well, but they're talking about press releases. They're talking about what Amanda's perceiving as reality.
Yeah. And there are certain portions of the population in the U.S. where life is not good economically. People have not recovered from their economic situation has stayed stagnant since the crash. And I think that the sort of the increasingly randomized sense that terrorism could be around the corner is a big fear for people. And Trump is very much talking about that. He's making it a central issue. Mm-hmm. And I think why a lot of journalists read the convention as, you know, Amanda read it as realistic, and that's fair. But I think the way that Trump sort of framed it up as a bit more doom and gloom, right? There wasn't a lot of—
You can't escape that. It was very dark, but she's saying it may be accurate.
I think that the Democrats talked about this stuff too at the convention. It's just that they framed it differently, right? There were many, 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 you know, families out there who were either the victim, you know, they were the families of victims of gun violence, or they were military mm-hmm. people who had lost kids. Mm-hmm. But there was an arc of hope at the end of the story, and the Trump convention, the testimonials at that convention lacked an arc of hope at the end of the story. And I think that that's what, you know, no one's denying that there are real fears in America right now. And I think to Amanda's point, mm-hmm. some people perceive them perhaps more. Maybe you want a different outcome, right? You either want someone to say it's going to get better. Let's work together to help it. And in Trump's case, he says, you know, I can fix it. So it's just a different framing.
Jack, what about Trump kind of saying we're going down unless I get in there and fix it? And some saw that as extreme. Amanda thought it was just right. But were the Democrats glossing over realities, Jack, when they put such an optimistic cast on the future of this country?
I think they were. I thought I was moved by President Obama's lyrical, Reagan-esque invocation of, you know, Norman Rockwell portrait of Kansas, where his grandparents came from. But, you know, that left out so much. It left out, in fact, what we're just talking about, that for a great many Americans, partly because of their economic situation, partly because of their, you know, status anxieties, they don't like what's happening to the country fundamentally. They don't like the multicultural, multiracial society we're moving to. They feel displaced by that. Richard Hofstadter years ago called that, you know, status anxiety, the feeling of people who are in a dominant group, that they're being threatened by an out-group. And throughout our history, that feeling on the part of a majority has led to marked intolerance, you know, to know-nothings, to persecutions of Catholics, to turning on various immigrant groups, to McCarthyism, and on and on. And today, I think we see it in Trumpism. It's a feeling of somebody's got to stop this now before this, you know, order of things that's been to our benefit. Not that there's been any great privilege for most white people at all, but just that feeling before that is effaced.
Who's reading this right, John?
I think they're both seeing the same thing. They're both looking at the same set of facts, the same same reality, mm-hmm. but taking different lessons from it. If you're not doing well economically, if you feel economically threatened, you are likely to have resentment toward immigrants who are undocumented in the country illegally. If you're doing well, you see that as adding to the rich mosaic and mixing pot of America. It really is the divide that we see in the country and in the populace. And I do think that people missed it, and I will count myself among them. That the people who had trouble understanding or were dismissive of Donald Trump at the beginning, I don't think fully understood the breadth of the anger and frustration.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, last year, Baltimore State's attorney Marilyn Mosby brought charges against the police officers involved in the death of Freddie Gray, promising justice. On Wednesday, she dropped those charges.
However, as a chief prosecutor elected by the citizens of Baltimore, I must consider the dismal likelihood of conviction at this point, the judicial economy in proceeding further, and the divisive impact that continuing this prosecution could potentially have on our community.
It's all done. French President François Hollande faced his country after yet another deadly attack claimed by ISIS, this one in a church in Normandy.
Je vous dois aussi cette vérité.
I owe you this truth. This war will be long. It is our democracy that is being targeted. It is the bullseye, and it will be our shield. It is our unity that makes us strong.
This war will be long, the French leader is saying there. And Thomas Bach, chairman of the International Olympic Committee, said that there will not be an across-the-board ban on Russian athletes at the Summer Olympics, but that officials are watching them closely.
No Russian athlete can compete in the Olympic Games Rio 2016 unless he or she meets some very strict criteria.
All that kicking off at the end of next week in Rio. We're looking at a week in the news. The Democrats in Philadelphia, Hillary Clinton, the nominee. The race is on. Donald Trump and the Russians. You can join us. Did the Democrats speak to you this week? And what about Trump this week? Calling out to the Russians to intervene? Cyber-wise, how do you come out of 2 weeks of conventions understanding Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton? Who do you trust? With Claire Malone of 538, John Yang of the PBS NewsHour, Jack Beatty's here as well, and you can join us. David's calling from Woodbury, Connecticut. David, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom. Thank you. I'm terrified of Donald Trump, but to first say that last night's finish of the convention was just wonderful. Hillary outdid herself in speaking, and it was just a joyous event. But I'm terrified of Donald Trump. The wall is just an awful idea. And what about the Rio Grande River? That would be access, flooding, tributaries. His very tone is angry, and I'm really scared of him. There's something about him that's just, I hate to say the word, it comes across fascistic. I'm worried about him. I hope people vote for Hillary. I believe she'll be our next president.
David, we've got it. Amanda in Georgia, feeling the Trump vibe. You not feeling it. I appreciate your call. Let's get one more. Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, you're on the air.
Tom, I am horrified by the fact that over 13 million of my fellow Americans voted for this xenophobic racist, Donald Trump. I'm absolutely mortified by that. And even more, what I'm angry at is I can't let you all get away with this truthiness, how I feel. People feel that things are not good. Let me push back on what you all were talking about on how people feel with a little reality. The last 2 months of George W. Bush, you remember him, Republican presidency?
Very well.
I had two jobs in my business. In the last 90 days of his presidency, I had two jobs. The last 3 years of his presidency, Republicans' presidency, my wife struggled to get a job that would pay her $12,000 to $15,000 a year. Struggled heartily. The stock market had dropped down to 6,000. That we were shedding over 800,000 jobs a month. That's not how I feel. That is the truth. flash forward now after the presidency of Barack Obama, during George W. Bush presidency, I had one truck in my business. Now I have a fleet 8 years later. My wife has a great job. Not that someone gave it to her because she went out there and earned it. She has a fantastic job. My 401k, her 401k is out the roof. My Roth is out the roof. Not to mention that the stock market is at all-time highs. If this was a Republican presidency during these past 8 years, that's all you would hear about and how great it is.
Carl, what do you take from it then? Do you say it's not the economy? You say it's all cultural then. It's cultural resistance to what's happening to the American population that's driving Trump?
And it's being pushed by, I'm afraid, by the media, by saying this, how people feel. You don't deal with math and numbers behind. Just because I feel like the unemployment rate is 10%, that doesn't mean it's so. And when Barack Obama
was sure.
president, the unemployment rate was at 10%. Now it is under 5%. Just because you feel like something is so doesn't make it so. And if we continuously let these people get away with this, we will put a xenophobic, racist, thin-skinned bully like Donald Trump as president of the United States. This man is dangerous, and it's very dangerous for people in the media with the megaphone to keep pushing this garbage that he's pushing. What the hell do you mean, let's make America great again? America is great right now.
Carl, we've got it loud and clear. We heard that message right across the Democratic platform this week, and we hear it from you today in Nashville. I mean, Claire, it is interesting that there is the unemployment rate, and it is way down from where it was, and the stock market is way high. You know, you can well imagine if it were a Republican incumbent going for reelection, this would be cast in a different way. And yet, Donald Trump puts it out there. Maybe it's the cultural changes, the population and racial and ethnic shifts you're talking about that have created discomfort.
Yeah.
Or is there something, can it be something that the numbers don't catch? Is it just a myth-making going on?
I think the caller hit on something which President Obama would probably want people to have taken from his Wednesday address, which was he spent the first part of his speech basically laying out the things that went well in his administration, saying that Americans are better off now that I've been in office. And you know, in many ways, Obama's legacy rests on whether or not Hillary Clinton wins. I think the other thing that makes Obama particularly invested in Hillary Clinton winning, and this, I think, touches on the cultural battle that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's no mistake, I think, that the first black president in the United States has engendered such a backlash, right? Donald Trump
is no mistake. It's no.
There's no mistaking mm-hmm. that. I think that you can say that a lot of these things. I think there are some people who are uncomfortable with a black president, and I think that has played in some ways to, you know, another thing that's an indicator of a person who votes Republican, who has voted Trump, counties where the population has gotten increasingly white. You know, they identify ethnically as American. Instead of, you know, most people on the census would check the form that says I'm German, I'm Irish, mm-hmm, they say mm-hmm, American. Mm-hmm. And I think there is some sense that there is pushback on the fact that we've had a black president for 8 years and the country is changing. By 2044, 50% of Americans will be part of a minority group. The country is changing and there's no way that it's going back. This is the way demographics work. And you know, I think that there's a lot resting on the Obama presidency, the legacy. And I think the caller sort of hinted at that.
John Yang, do you see resistance to that change, even just in the mind? Because it's not changing demographically, it's moving forward. But is a kind of a resistance in the heart and mind, if not in the numbers, as Carl says? What drives then this darker picture?
I think it is people who are uncomfortable with the change, uncomfortable with the idea that whites will eventually be a minority in this country, that Hispanics have already in many places in California are becoming a larger and larger portion of the population.
We heard the mayor of Los Angeles say at the Democratic convention, Donald Trump, what would he do? Would he try and build a wall around my city? It is a very Hispanic city.
Yeah, I mean, there are these changes that are happening. People are uncomfortable with it. They don't understand it. The whole Donald Trump slogan of "Make America Great Again" is the idea of sort of going back, and I think that's appealing to a lot of people.
Dave in Hartford, Connecticut. Dave, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, what do you see?
One of my things that, you know, I'm an African-American male, and I'm actually voting for Trump. Because, you know, you look at the way the Democrats have been running this country. I mean, you know, everybody wants to make everything seem like it's so, you know, fine and dandy, and we live in this utopia. And, you know, there are real issues that we're facing. And I don't think the Democrats are really putting it out there, you know, some of the ideas, some of the things that are happening right now. You know, everything is a sugarcoat. And then, you know, to try to fight for what Trump is saying, you're trying to, you know, dictate and say, oh, well, the man's a racist. Well, what did he say was racist? He says he'll build a wall around, you know, Mexico. I mean, but how is that saying that he's racist?
What issue do you see as burning that the Democrats didn't call out clearly, David? Dave?
I'm sorry, you were breaking. My phone was breaking up. Can you repeat that again?
What's the issue that you see Democrats sugarcoating? Like what?
Well, I think the whole economy thing. I think the whole, you know, we're in trouble with different countries. The whole terrorist stuff. The stuff with ISIS.
Stock market's high. So, unemployment's low.
I think unemployment right now is still high. I mean, you know, everyone want to use these statistics and say, well, you know, unemployment hasn't improved, you know, and more people are working now than before. I mean, that's all crap. I mean, you look around. I know a ton of people, even in the construction industry and also in other industries, who are out of work. Yeah, so where's this increase at?
Tom?
Jack Beatty, please jump in. Thank you, Dave. We got it, Dave.
Yeah, you know, Dave's point is buttressed by a headline in today's Washington Post. Economic growth in the last quarter was 1.2%. In 1984, when Ronald Reagan ran for re-election, it was almost 4%. In fact, at one point, I think it was 4%. That was really mourning in America. At 1.2%, that's not a buoyant economy. That's a slow recovery that isn't all that much far away from, you know, perhaps a dip, a recession.
Daniela in Wellesley, Massachusetts. Daniela, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. My point has something to do with Hillary. I watched the convention yesterday, heard her speech. I am a Bernie supporter. I was skeptical and waiting for her to convince me. And she totally did. And I don't know at this point what we want from her. What are our expectations on a woman? Are we still biased? Are we ready for a woman president? She delivered yesterday with substance. She talked about what she wanted to do and how she wanted to do it. We had a very good speech yesterday, and I don't see why are we not like being able to like receive that and talk about that. We still are hooked with this Donald Trump thing. Let's hear what she has to say and receive it and be able to talk about it.
Well, it's a two-person race. I agree. It was quite a strong speech for Hillary Clinton. I think there's not really any question about that. But it's also a real race in the polls, at least at this point. Donald Trump is doing very well lately. So we've got to talk about that. That's what the general election is going to all be about. But yes, I thought it was a good performance last night. She's reached out in particular. I want to talk about this to Bernie Sanders supporters there in the hall and beyond. She thanked Bernie Sanders, made this direct appeal to his supporters.
You put economic and social justice issues front and center where they belong. And to all of your supporters here and around the country, I want you to know, I've heard you. Your cause is our cause.
Claire Malone, A, is that going to bring Sanders supporters into her camp? And B, is it true? Your cause is our cause. Is Hillary, I know there's a lot of it in the platform,
yeah,
but is she really going to take on a trade and all the rest, the Sanders push?
Well, I think that Sanders, you know, if Clinton becomes president, Sanders is still going to be in the Senate, still going to be he's been given a big microphone these days.
Yep.
So I think that, you know, I think we're seeing Hillary Clinton probably being pushed to the left just out of the fact that people in the party, that wing of the party, is becoming more vocal. Will Sanders supporters vote for Clinton? If you actually look at the numbers, most Sanders supporters like Clinton. They're probably going to vote for her. They like her politics. There is a vocal minority who will not vote for Clinton, who will probably peel off and vote for someone like Jill Stein or
Green Party.
Gary Johnson from the Libertarians. Mm-hmm. those are people, you know, when I was talking to people outside who are protesting, and even people in the California delegation, which had a – it's the biggest delegation, had the most vocal Bernie Sanders caucus. They were very vocal. A lot of those people are first time in the Democratic Party, first time voters even. And I think that there is certainly a portion of the Sanders contingent that won't vote for Clinton, but I think the majority will.
So they come over. John Yang, you saw, though, how the sort of persistent no way, no how feeling among some of those at the convention this week. You think that will drift with time?
Well, it's interesting that as you say, as Claire said, California was really the
center of
the
that,
center of
shouting
that.
Loud in the hall.
And also that's a safe Democratic state. A lot of the people I talked to said if they lived somewhere else, if they lived in a swing state, if they lived in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, they'd be voting for Hillary Clinton, because they felt the biggest mission was to defeat Donald Trump. But because they live in California and they feel there's no danger or no risk.
Let her rip.
Exactly.
Jack Beatty, where are we here at the end of 2 weeks of these conventions? The picture's painted. We just got a minute here. Kind of flip of tone between Republicans and Democrats. And now we're lined up for November, Jack. What's the frame?
Well, I think the president framed it when he said anyone who threatens our values, whether fascists or communists or jihadists or homegrown demagogues, will always fail in the end. He's casting Trump in the line of those threats to our democracy. That's a serious charge. And when you have Trump on the next day saying Vladimir Putin is a real leader, unlike our president, comparing a dictator to a democratically elected president, it's almost as if he's bearing out what the president just said.
Well, it has been an absolutely fascinating 2 weeks, kind of polar opposite tones at these conventions, very different experiences. Americans watching, listening, and now we will see the real rumble as we head through these next months. 101 days now until the election, November 8th, something right around there.
Not that we're counting.
100 and change, not that we're counting. I want to thank you, Claire Malone, with 538 for being with us today in the podcast there on Elections at 538. Thank you so much for being here, Claire.
Thanks for having me.
John Yang with the PBS NewsHour. Wonderful to have you with us at WHYY here in Philadelphia.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Jack Beatty, great to have you as always, my good friend.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for being with us through all these 2 weeks in Cleveland and Philadelphia. From Philadelphia and WHYY today, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.